Hey, everybody. Welcome to Comically Exposed, the podcast where we talk about OCD and comedy and breaking into comedy. And then we're just hilarious. My name is Gabby Blackman. And the other fabulous host of this podcast is
Heather Nye.
Perfect. this is episode 15. If you haven't heard the previous 14 episodes, you're probably lost. I'm just kidding. Welcome. We're going to talk about OCD and stuff today. Yeah.
Nothing different here.
Nothing at all. Okay. Well, I know right before this podcast, we talked about maybe changing up the format for this one just a teensy bit, which is cool. And I'm here for it. So we're going to talk about stuff that we want to do with comedy. Was that the idea?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
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 All right. Well, fantastic. I feel like you have a list, a mental list, a post-it someplace. What are you thinking about as far as comedy?
Well, I've been actually like thinking about it because I feel like I try a little bit of everything, and that's, there's nothing wrong with trying a little bit of everything. But knowing me and knowing my diagnosis, I know that that can lead to not doing anything. Not to judge myself, because doing this is hard enough, you know.
Yeah.
Doing it with OCD is, you know, chef kiss, you know, of a situation. But things that I really want to do that's really important to me is getting stuff out there.
Yes.
And I know that part of this podcast is part of that, is to kind of expose ourselves to doing that. But I also want, I feel the need to create something more fictional.
Yeah.
And so something I really want to try to do is put something out there, whatever format, I don't know, fictionalized comedy series.
Yes.
Cause that's what I want to do.
Yes.
You know, like I love TV. I love sitcoms. I love, mm-hmm. you know, all things comedy. And that is just kind of my perspective. And actually this, I should preface this. This is because the change in format is because I've been working on a lot of value-based thinking mm-hmm. with my ACT class. And
yeah.
a part of the thinking is trying to work towards something that I value. And part of that is the creative work that I do. And so, mm-hmm. so right now, because I feel a little bit more open to creating something, I really want to create something, either a fictional podcast series or something, to be able to put it out there into the world and have people enjoy it, not just in my head.
Yes.
How about you, Gabby?
Oh, we're just gonna skip.
Well,
right,
we can go back and forth.
Okay. A little volleyball. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm just really excited by the prospect of doing that. The fact that you're excited to do something creative is just like really gotten me kind of excited about it too, because as people know, I'm really deep into the job search nonsense, which I had kind of a breakthrough because, thank God, my sister, she suggested, because I'm trying to get a state job through California, and it is, the website is a nightmare. If you want to go to like the sixth gate of hell, it is just a great time to, you know, go from window to window and you're trying to just get one thing done, but you can't. Anyway, big recommend. So that's calcareers.gov or .com. So congratulations. You're about to have a real good time. Miriam suggested that I look at Reddit to see if there was any kind of advice. And boy, howdy, there was fantastic advice. So I have been just kind of flailing about in the job search situation, trying to figure out what jobs I could possibly be qualified for, because the name of the job has nothing to do with whether you're qualified for it. And there's no like category really of like qualifications. You just have to know by the title of the job whether that is a job title that you're qualified for. And yet there's no like, the list of jobs is probably over 500 different types of jobs, right, with a different job title. So then clicking through each one to a new window, by the way, and then having to read through like so much bullshit is like, I don't know why I was avoiding this. You know, I don't know why I've been procrastinating on it, because it has just been a dopamine roller coaster of fun. Anyway, so the advice from Reddit was, if you have a 4-year degree, there is a part of the site where you can look up what your degree is and what jobs you're qualified for.
Oh,
holy shit. Game changer. Like, fully holy shit. Game changer. Also, bananas. If you have a physics degree, which is what I have, you can be like a deputy fire marshal of the state of California. And I'm like, under no circumstances is that correct. And another one was like, I don't even know. They were just a lot of these jobs. I was like, okay, sure. But there are some that I'm excited about. So that's happening. But the whole point of this diatribe is because I have been missing doing creative stuff, and I feel like I'm wilting. I'm like, I know there's joy in this life. But I, you know, it's like, and I've been watching like comedy specials, and it just makes me fucking sad. Because yeah. I want to be doing comedy stuff, and I'm, yeah. So I am so with you. All of that is to say, what do I want to do? I don't know. I'll be honest. I don't know. The first thing that comes to mind is I still really want to do a table read, and I'm just like, what is the easiest, shittiest way that I can make that happen? You know, because the perfectionism is really coming into play whenever I think about it. It's like,
yeah.
I want to make sure everybody's on board and doesn't feel like, I don't know, used by providing their voice to this like character or something. And
they've signed contracts.
Yes, exactly. Everybody is in the guild, you know, like, because obviously I have no money to give to anyone, mm-hmm. nor do I have copyrights on any of my stuff. Which I don't know if I need, but anyway, the whole point is like the stupid Warner Brothers writing contest, which was the whole reason that I wrote these dumb scripts. It's like, I don't even think they're going to accept What We Do in the Shadows anymore, because Shadows is going into its final season.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, and they never accept It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So what am I doing with these things? Like, I would much rather like have my friends read them and we have like a goofy good time. And then I do some rewrites because then I'm inspired to like make it better or do something else.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that, because it's like, it's honing your craft, and mm-hmm. It's less about, you know, an end result in the sense of getting something. Other than getting something out of it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Which is legit.
That is legit. That is legit. I think I need to think that way more often.
How does this benefit this guy?
Mm-hmm. No, because there is that thing where the perfectionism does hold you back, right?
Yeah.
It does. I mean, procrastination.
Oh,
you
God.
Know, I know. And, you know, avoidance. There's always something else. Avoidance.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's getting the work done is just doing the work, right? And making time for it. And that's it. Ugh. You know, yes. there's no gold star at the end.
No, but at the same time, I think what you're talking about is like us working on stuff that doesn't feel like a grind.
Yes. Yes.
You know? Yeah, and just like joy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And just doing it for the fun of it rather than for some other outcome, you know, that, you know, we can never control, right? Yeah. I mean, you can make the perfect, most hilarious sitcom that anybody's ever heard, and it could never see the light of day.
Yeah, and I know. I'm sure
there's plenty of them.
Yeah, I think there are. And that's the thing, is I kind of like hearing about, you know, when comedians go on podcasts and whatever and they talk about the industry. And I love hearing about like amazing writers and people who have done incredible shows that just make me pee myself with laughter. And then they've sold like a sitcom that they worked with other brilliant people on. And it's like they think it's their best work and they're so proud of it. But the studio bought it and then all the executives changed out. And so they don't want to do, like, when there's new executives that come in, they scrap everything that the previous executives were working on because it's, I don't know, it's like an ego thing or it's like a professional thing so that everything that they do is new and there's like a delineation between the managements. I don't really know. But so then this like project they'd been working on for like 5 years is never going to see the light of day because it's owned by the studio. They did buy it. So they can't bring it to anybody else.
Oh, no.
But it's in purgatory, right? And so, but which is funny that it makes me so happy to hear that because it means there is no fucking perfect way to do it.
True. Very true.
I you also don't have control.
Yeah, you don't have control at all. You don't have control of that. And I recently, I watched a panel. Oh, my God. I can't remember who was through, but it was fascinating because these people worked in the industry actively and they were pretty, you know, like 5, 10, 20 years into their careers, all in different ranges. And they were talking about how it is to work in a writer's room, how complicated it's getting because of studios are starting to close a little bit in because they spent so much cash before. And now they're like, okay, we spent way too much cash on shows that we didn't really, you know, I mean, and we all see it, right? When you're watching TV or streaming or whatever, you just see these shows show up and then they disappear, you know? And so, and you see that a lot time and time again, but it also made me think about, hey, how can I just create my own thing?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, why do I need to depend on somebody else to do something, you know?
Yeah.
And, I don't know. I think we've talked about that before in terms of like just putting it out there and seeing what it does and not really caring, you know, whether or not it's popular or not.
Yeah.
That it's just for you.
Yeah.
Just for us.
Yes, exactly. Just for us because it makes us giggle. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
1,000%.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited about that.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. Yeah, I also have ideas of so the day or two after Halloween, the Halloween store is like 50% off or whatever. But you go in there and it looks like 3 days after an apocalypse. You know, there's just like, you know, one like stray boot for a giant and one werewolf teeth and whatever. Anyway, so I have a significant amount of Halloween store wigs that all I really wanted to do was set up a green screen, put on a wig and do like just find the fucking character and like do some nonsense for just a couple minutes and then, you know, like edit it down or whatever and post it on Instagram. But I have so much perfection around that. And especially because, like my absolute favorite thing on Instagram, and the show now is, I think it's called Very Important People, that show with Vic Michaelis, and they get a, the show puts a comedian in like full makeup, hair, wardrobe. Without the comedian seeing what it is. And then at the very end, they reveal it and they're an improviser. So they find the character and then they go and Vic Michaelis interviews them.
Yeah, it's so funny.
Oh my God. One of them, Tommy Shrigley, I swear to God, I could be borderline suicidal. I don't mean to be flip about that, but I am joking. And watch him, they give him little miniature plastic hands and he starts clapping with them. And I swear to God, nothing else in this world could make me upset when I'm just watching him clap. But I'm worried that because that's the premise of their show, the fact that I would put on a wig and come up with a character is too... Okay, I see the expression on your face.
No. I know where you're going.
Yeah.
No. You know, everything, nothing is original.
Right.
The only way that it's original, it's that it's from you and it's your perspective. And so it's coming from your perspective. And so, yeah, I would say just do it.
Okay. I'm writing it down as a fun thing.
Yeah.
Wig videos. That's what I'm writing down.
Yes.
Wig videos.
And if there's a problem with you editing them, then maybe you could ask a friend to like edit it for you.
Oh, cool. You mean the friend that I already feel like I rely on way too much and take too much of her brilliant time? And
no, you don't take any of my time.
Well, you say that now, but in the middle of the night, I'm hunched over you, sucking out your life force. So
yeah, yeah. It's all good.
That's just a hobby of mine. Anyhow, yeah, so wig videos.
But I think in terms of being supportive, and then, you know, if you feel like something is an impedance, like to get something out the door.
That's so true. Know. I really appreciate you saying that. I would love to take you up on that.
Yeah.
And vice versa. If I can ever be of any assistance besides.
You know, just if I need you to show up in a wig.
In a wig.
Yeah. You know, when I have to go to the doctor.
Yes.
It's like, Gabby, you know, I can't go. Could you go in a wig?
Perfect. You know? And I'll put on the Moira Rose wig that I purchased. Uh-huh. Looks exactly like your hair. Half mauve, half silver.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
And show up and I'll say, yes, I'm Heather Nye.
And I'm here for my gynecological appointment.
You didn't say I needed to wear a merkin. Okay.
Yeah. I thought it was implied.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's, I'm just not method as an actor, but I can get there. I can do that. For you, I'll go to the Halloween store and I will demand a matching merkin, a Moira Rose merkin. Okay, perfect. Done. Set. We're good. See,
we did it.
We're already there. Oh, you know, the other probably OCD thing that I have about the videos is kind of like it comes up with improv too. Basically, it's this, like, I'm afraid of revealing too much of my psyche through the characters that might come out.
You know what's funny? I have the same problem with writing.
Yes! Yes, dude. Okay, say more.
But see, that's the thing, is that I feel like that maybe I just become vulnerable and maybe I just allow it to be, you know, because it's everybody else does it. You know, they don't realize they're doing it. But
that fucking part, though.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, sure, I could dance in front of a tiger, too, if I didn't know the tiger was fucking there. I could also do that. But the fact is, unlike these morons who are dancing in front of a tiger in a like completely darkened room, so you can't see the tiger, I'm out here with like just like the lights that they use for construction in the middle of the night. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just showing all the tigers just willy-nilly walking around and then being like, hey, Gabby, why don't you try and be funny? Do it now. Now be funny. Tell a joke. Go on. Go on. If it's not good enough, you know what that means. It means you're a terrible person.
Yeah.
That's no business in comedy.
It always leads to that, right?
Yeah, well, that's true.
You're a terrible person.
Yeah.
That's just where it all leads to. Uh-huh. So maybe because you lead to that. Yeah.
Lead to being a terrible person. Yeah. Well, that's good because then all of my characters can just be... bad. I was going to come up with some other things, but then I was like, oh, current state of the world. Let's just skate over.
Well, yeah, let's not like, you know, emphasize, you know, like the need for more of those people. But, you could just be your version of a terrible person.
Yeah, you know? Which is fine. And the thing is, when it's in improv with other people on stage, I am still worried about tipping my hand and showing the absolute dark chaos that is my soul. But there's so many other people on stage that I'm like, you know, things are like happening. So if anybody clocks what I'm doing, like give it 30 seconds, you know, one of these other assholes are going to come in as like a incest pirate or something. And then I'm fine. The classic trope.
Yeah. Incest pirate.
Incest pirate, you know. All the time.
I can't even say that without laughing. and being uncomfortable at the same time.
I don't know why. I think most people can just say the word incest and not be like, oh.
A little vomit there.
Just yeah. a tiny bit.
Yeah. Oh, God.
The podcast comes to a screeching halt.
But it is funny because it's like you do reveal pieces of yourself when you do perform in general. Which is funny to say because, you know, when you were doing and I'm sure you're going to continue to do stand-up comedy, you know, hopefully. It's extremely revealing and being vulnerable on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's but I think in the sense it's more controlled because you know what you're going to say.
Yeah.
You're committing to what you're going to say rather than it being a slip going, you know.
I'm an incest pirate. And by the way, NSA, do not look at my porn search terms. It is definitely not incest pirate. Don't worry about it.
Oh.
Once again. Yeah. And it's also cool or interesting that that's something that I love that comedians do is like when they reveal stuff about themselves, you know, whether it seems consciously or unconsciously, I'm like, ooh, awesome. Fantastic.
Oh, yeah. 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 You kind of get more pulled into it.
Oh, yeah. Do you ever follow Zach Woods on Instagram? You know, Gabe from The Office.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And his shit is so amazing. Like, I fall in love with that guy every time he says some kind of, like, dystopian, dark, just, like, there's no hope, weird, chaotic. I'm just like, yes. But the thought of, like, me putting that out there, I'm like, oh, no, I could not because everybody thinks of me as this perfect creature. And I have everyone fooled.
Oh, yeah. I think of it, like, as for me, it's like I think I make myself small so that.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, that a little too enthusiastic?
Well, you know, it's less about being, I mean, maybe it's a little bit more, maybe it's a little bit about being perfect, but it's mostly about not rocking a boat or
upsetting someone.
Upsetting someone, yes, is the biggest one because I always feel ultimately responsible for somebody.
Yeah, well, I forget at what point in OCD treatment or whatever I was in, it was like a sense of over-responsibility, like the harm reduction and whatever. And I was like, that's not OCD. That's just what you have to do every waking moment of the day and also when you're asleep.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just feel responsible for everybody's actions, feelings, life, choices.
Psychology.
Childhoods.
Yeah. Childhood is a big one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like it's when they were saying like the older sister syndrome or whatever.
Yeah, totally. Like, I know.
I was like, yes, I am an older sister, but I also have OCD. And
you're like, so that is two for one.
I am guaranteed to be responsible for everybody. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I do limit what I say. Some of it is because of privacy reasons, but other things are like more because, it's that same idea of being revealing or vulnerable in a way that is not of my control.
I was just gonna say that vulnerability released in the most rehearsed manner possible, which I think by definition is
not a control vulnerability. Yeah, I know. It's not vulnerability at all. Well, I do. I am like, especially for a podcast, like I do try like not to have a conversation in my head about it.
That is. Yeah, that is really good. I have that too. I wonder if that's an OCD, like intrusive thought thing where it's just like whoever I'm talking to, there's like a shadow version that's like screaming at me or.
Yeah. You're just having the worst argument about something that you did that you didn't do.
Yeah.
That you're a terrible person. That you could do because, you know, you did
it. If you're not careful. Yeah, exactly. That you could do because it's already done.
You're the worst person in the world. You know, those conversations do happen. I think they're like a compulsion, right? It's kind of like an imaginal compulsion or something like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it's like I'm consciously trying not to feed into them and to refocus like on you or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's also like such the neural pathways have been, you know, gone over so often that it's tough not to fall back in that groove.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, because it's I think my psychiatrist calls it like an automatic process. I don't think it's his term, but I think it's a term because a lot of people who have OCD and if they exhibit a lot of physical compulsions. I think all of us have mental compulsions, whether or not you realize it. And so some of them are, they become automatic. Mm-hmm. Or as he likes to call it, he likes to call them cheap because they're the easiest ones. They're the easiest ones to get to.
It's like
to.
The low hanging fruit. Uh-huh.
Yeah. 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 Cause it's the ones that you go to automatically. And sometimes you don't even realize it. As I've learned in my ACT classes that I'm like, oh, that's a compulsion, you know? Like,
yes, dude.
I had no idea.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Before I got my diagnosis and a lot of treatment, I would have these sort of, it was like a flash of an entire movie where one of my loved ones would get in a horrific car accident or be kidnapped by terrorists, you know, the classics. Mm-hmm. Everything that can happen, a plane crash, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it would be in very quick succession, it would be like what I could do to help them, what I should have done to prevent it. And also like it goes all the way through their death, the funeral, the grief process afterwards, the absolute like horrendous life that I have to live after they're gone, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as I was like saying the beginning parts of this, the therapist, the OCD person was like, great. So now we're just going to run like the whole worst case scenario. And then that's, you know, how you get out of it. And I'm like, no, I'm already doing that because it was like, and so it took a while to figure out like, oh, it's like a compulsion. And mm-hmm. I think it was in CBT that they were like, great. So keep going, like follow the rest of it to its end. And I'm like, girl, I am already doing that. Like I had to pick out a casket. Like I don't, you know, like I was haggling with the price, you know, it was like, it was a very detailed, very quick thing.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And you were like talking about taxes and.
Yes, exactly. Talking with my remaining family members and going to therapy with them. I mean, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You had to pick a good therapist. We had to switch therapists. You know, it was like then my family member couldn't make it because the commute was tough. So we had to switch again. It's like a whole thing. My car broke down. Anyway, so then they're like, oh, add detail to it or whatever. And I'm like, we'll be here all day. But getting back to the fact that this is like, it took a while for somebody to point out, hey, that's a compulsion.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's one of those ones that you were talking about with your therapist. It's a cheap, automatic process.
Yep.
Because they would also be like, oh, okay, it's a compulsion, then just stop. And I'm like, cool. Can I also just will myself $1 million? Can that happen as well?
Yeah, I know. It's like with with any kind of compulsion, because so with OCD, for those who know or don't know, OCD can attach to anything. And especially like attaching to any sort of treatment that you're doing. You know, if you're like, if you're classic overthinkers like us,
never once,
who tend to lean towards perfectionism, that or all or nothing, or, you know, that kind of thinking. That that it can attach itself to anything, you know, and usually the things that you love the most, like family members. And so some of the things can be intrusive thoughts, and some of them can be compulsions, and sometimes they can feel mixed. Like for me, it's like, I don't really understand like when this happens to me, but I have a process where things glitch. Like the first thought happens, like the intrusive thought happens, but then it happens over and over and over again. It's almost like an analysis of it. And it makes me uncomfortable after a while, because that's what compulsions do, right? They relieve you, and then they make you uncomfortable, and then you have to do another compulsion, and then it happens again and again and again in this vicious cycle. It's strange. I guess maybe that's, I don't know. Of course it's strange.
No, I'm just saying it out loud. Yeah.
So, I don't know where I'm going with it. Like,
I don't know, but I was wondering if there was something like with your ACT class that was like helping you with these like intrusive thoughts / automatic compulsions, or like the glitch that you're talking about.
Yeah. One of the most recent tools that I've been utilizing that I've learned in this class has been dropping anchor. It's a mindful practice that's kind of similar to meditation, but quicker. You're in your body, you're out of your body, you know, stuff like that.
Yes. It's amazing how helpful that shit is.
Oh, yeah. Dropping anchor and ACT in general, really. And that's for those who are listening, acceptance and commitment therapy can help with a multitude of different mental health issues. But this particular is really helpful for my OCD. And so the building upon anchoring down, we can use diffusion within it, or this other term that's called dipping in and out, which I'm starting to learn more about. So I'm not like an expert at it, but essentially it's the RP part of ERP, and it's to practice the response prevention part, even when you're not in an exposure. So yeah, you can use things that are pretty banal, or you can use things that can trigger you. But it's, the intent is to teach you how to see, I think it's to teach you how to see that a feeling is a feeling and a thought is a thought, not that there's something that's of ownership to whatever, or meaning or intention. Yeah. And
that's
so,
cool.
Yeah. And so I'm really excited about that, because I feel like that part of ERP, I find very challenging. Is to actually allow my emotions to come in. There's a part of me that becomes like protective. You know, and detaches. So it's and but it's, if you do detach, it's not about judging. That's the new thing that I'm learning. It's not about, it's not about judging the detachment. It's to acknowledge it's there.
I was gonna say the noticing of it.
Yes.
That's a whole different, I like that.
Yeah. So for me, it's starting to, I don't know, open me up a little bit more to that, and hoping that ERP can become more of a practiced process, rather than it feeling like it works sometimes, it doesn't work other times. But again, it's not about it working, right? It's about practicing. And so I have to, you know, like try to change my mindset about what it is, you know, and that's that part of treatment, you know, in terms of what works for you and what doesn't work for you. And so, yeah, I'm still kind of managing that, but I think this class has been opening my eyes up to a lot of different things, and I'm trying to not hold it so tightly. And so, as like gospel, you know, and stuff like that, but at the same time, kind of noticing like, oh yeah, I could talk to my therapist about this.
Yeah.
You know, but now I feel like I have words to say these things instead of saying like, I feel, Or because I find it challenging when I can't attach a word to an emotion.
Yes.
You know, and then everything goes blank because I'm putting a lot of pressure on myself. Yes.
1,000%.
Yeah. But it's nice to be able to get into a mindset where you can challenge yourself, but then at the same time,
hold it loosely.
Yeah. Not like grip it like so hard where it just kind of, it actually disappears. Not goes away, but it disappears from your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's okay. For people who don't have our thing, I think a good explanation would be like when you're trying to tell someone about a dream you had, and the more you try and remember those specific details, like the harder it is to grab a hold on to.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're, you know, like sometimes what I end up doing is I'm like, I make it like, oh, that wasn't that big of a deal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. You minimize. Know, yeah.
Yeah. I totally minimize, even though internally I feel
screaming. Sorry.
Yeah. Like, yeah. No. It's exactly what I was going to say. It's like, you know, it's like, oh, my God, this feels so intense. Mm-hmm. And then when you try to explain it and then you're just like, oh, I'm minimizing it now because I don't want you to be scared.
I had a panic attack last night.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I went out with somebody to a movie. And after the 35 minutes of previews, ads, and bullshit, God, I sound so fucking old. the lights went down for like the feature presentation. And I turned to the person and I said, oh, I'm having a panic attack.
Oh, geez.
And they were very sweet, but I was like, my panic attacks are, I need to run. Like the inside of my body is telling me to rip off my skin and just book it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I like dropped my phone on the floor, which was bad because it was dark in the theater at that point. And I was just like, okay, hold it together until you find your fucking phone. Found my phone. And then just they were like, what do you need? Do you want us to leave? Do you want to go outside and get water? Do you want to blah, blah, blah? And I was just like, yeah. And then I just like stood up, walked out, also was walking like a crazy person, could not remember how I walk.
Yeah.
And then just got out into the main part of the, you know, multiplex and just walking up and down the hallway there, and the whole time just like trying to breathe normal sauce, trying to bring down the panic, telling myself like this is temporary, all the things. But the whole point of this is so the person comes out of the theater. Also, we're the only two people in the theater. But the person comes out and they get panic attacks too, which is great because they were very supportive. But they came and like gave me a hug and just started walking with me, which was very, very sweet.
Yeah.
And but they kept asking me questions, like not a lot, but just like, what do you want to do? Do you want to keep walking? Do you want water? Do you want to leave? You want to da 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 da. And I was shut down.
Yeah.
The inside of me was screaming.
Yeah.
And I couldn't articulate a fucking thing. And yeah. Yeah, that was it, literally. So I like got myself together. They were like, did you bring Ativan? I was like, no. Did I bring warheads? No, none of my things. Cause I'm just going to a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why would I need any of that? Who's it's fine. You know? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so we get, they keep asking me, like, if you want to leave, we can leave. Like, it's not a big deal at all. And I'm like, it's okay. They're like, we can, you know, go watch TV. You can eat good food, whatever. And I'm like, just shaking my head because I can't talk.
Yeah.
And then we go back into the theater and I proceed to just kind of have, like, not full-blown panic, but it keeps threatening to come back and just, like, heightened anxiety.
Yeah.
And again, they're being so sweet, like holding my hand, rubbing my back, checking in with me. And I was like, I'm not going to let this panic attack win. So I kind of went the other route. It was like, instead of holding onto the panic attack loosely, I was like, why don't we just white knuckle through this fucking thing? All I have to say is the movie that we watched, a dog gets shot within the first like 5 minutes of the fucking movie.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I was like, okay.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I was like, was just kind of coming out of the panic. And then that happened. And I was like, okay, just right back in, just like trying not to stop breathing, you know.
Yeah.
Scream,
yeah.
All the things. Get up, rip off my skin, run out again. So I made it through the whole movie. Then the person was like, you know, what was it that caused the panic attack, you know? And I was like, I think it was just overstimulation.
Yeah.
Like the bright flashiness of the very large screen and like, also, they have these like comfy chairs, which aren't comfy. It felt like my head was being pushed forward the whole time. None of this matters. The point is, I had a panic attack and I got very nonverbal.
Mm-hmm.
And then you and I were talking about before even the podcast was about how it's easy for us to be vulnerable and talk about things when they're past tense.
Yes. Yes. Yes, we did talk about that because it's easy to kind of, because we're over it or we've solved it or
processed.
Or it's been processed and not talking about something or being vulnerable and talking about problems that are happening in the moment is really difficult because it's extremely vulnerable and you don't know what you're going to expose, right? You don't know like what you're telling the world. That's a problem. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, part of me is like, okay, so maybe the better thing to do would be to let out whatever that is and let the chips fall where they may. But I'm getting like sweaty palms even saying that because I'm like, well, then no one is ever going to like me ever again.
Oh.
I'm going to lose all family and friends because I am just a very awful, dark, disturbed individual.
And that's when self-compassion comes in to play, especially with panic attacks.
Yeah, exactly. I know. So true, though.
Yeah, it is. It is. Because it's not the thing that you go to first, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to tell yourself, you know what? I know this is hard for you. And it's really hard to say that to yourself, right? In the moment.
Yeah.
Because, it's like it's coming out of nowhere. It feels like it's coming out of nowhere, right?
Yeah.
It's just triggered by whatever. And then you're in the middle of it and you're thinking everybody else is acting normal.
Yeah.
Why am I not acting normal?
Yes.
You know, like, why do I have to deal with this? And I think we kind of forget that, you know, we have to come back at it kind of coming to us like as, you know, hey, this is incredibly hard. This is very difficult. And, you know,
even you saying that just like dislodged and loosened things like in my heart. I physically just felt that. Yeah.
Aww. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And I think that we forget that as, you know, in OCD, I mean, it's a practice, right? And those things don't come natural. To kind of find that support, you know, to ourselves and, you know, to other people, you know, you're very generous and supportive too. And so like when I have a situation and then you say something, I feel that touched, you know, but then when you have to turn it inward.
Oh God.
I know.
So hard.
It is.
It's like, maybe I've talked about this before, but it's like, you know, I have ADHD. I'm late to fucking everything. I will set an alarm 30 minutes before to be like, oh, that's when it's really happening. But then I'm like, I know that I'm tricking myself. Do you know what I mean? So I remember that. And then I go through the 30 minutes as if it's fine. And then I'm late. And it feels like the same sort of trick for self-compassion. It's like, I don't know.
But it, I don't know if it is. Like, because it does something to you when you actually say it. It's so funny because it's like saying it out loud. I know what you mean. Like, you know, like, oh, I'm tricking myself. You know, if you say it out loud, it's like, yeah, whatever, you know. But when you're saying it in the moment, when you're in pure panic, I mean, when I have a panic attack, I can't breathe. And I feel like I'm having some sort of like, okay, this is the end. I'm having a heart attack. You know, I'm going to die right here and I can't breathe. And, you know, all I can do is get up and race around the house, you know, like as if this is the thing that's going to solve the problem.
Yes.
And and yes, I'm extremely nonverbal. I mean, when my husband tries to help me, I go, like, you know, like, don't say anything. Don't say anything. Yeah. And he knows now. But before, he used to try to do so much. And I felt so bad because I felt like I was being mean. But I wasn't. I was literally like, I'm going to die. You know, I don't want you to see this. I don't want whatever. And it's funny because it's not natural to just stop, you know, from the fight or flight, you know.
Yeah, 1,000%, because that is literally what your body is telling you, is there is a tiger, run, bitch.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, I will start fucking running. And then the like remedy is stop running.
Yeah. Which feels impossible in that moment, because there's so much adrenaline or whatever is flowing through your body, you know, like telling you to do something.
Every cell in your body is like, you're going to die. Or for me, it's, this is what your life is going to be forever. This is it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to last forever.
And so drawing it back inward.
Uh-huh. And just, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No. You should say it.
It was what you were saying, like, to tell myself, hey, Gabby, you're having a hard time right now.
Yeah.
It's like, first of all, brings tears to my eyes because I'm like, it's so beautiful. But truly, it is. It's like so beautiful, but also so impossible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, if I'm running from a tiger, to be like, hey, you're having a hard time.
And it solves everything.
I know, but it actually does.
It does.
But that's the logic, because like, truly, you're running from a tiger. Grab a gun, grab a stick. Like, I don't, like, these seem like the actual solutions, but instead it is stop running and tell yourself, golly, this seems like a really rough spot to find yourself in. Turn around, face the tiger, and just be like, hey, buddy.
But it does loosen something within, you know, like when you do say that to yourself, you know, like, hey, this is hard for me.
Yeah.
You know, and just being able to come back with compassion, even in that simple phrase, because that simple phrase is the one that I have locked and loaded, because if I try to complicate it, it doesn't work. Right. As well. Like, because I don't access it.
Mm-hmm.
There is no accessing that when you're in that mode, there's no access.
No,
but it's not becoming automatic because I don't do it right away. But when I'm finally like coming to a place where I'm like, you know, I hold my hand to my chest. Mm-hmm. It's that feeling of, you know, comfort, like self, you know, soothing.
Self-soothe. Yeah.
Yeah. And then as soon as I do that, that's when I can finally say it.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel,
well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because we're in the lizard brain.
Yep.
And truly the prefrontal cortex is cut off in those panic times. And that is your logic and language brain.
Yeah.
So that makes so much sense that it takes a minute.
Yeah. And sometimes the touching doesn't help. Sometimes what it is grounding myself. So even putting my feet firmly on the ground.
That's a good one. Yeah. I grabbed this person's soda and I put it on my wrists and my fingers.
Ah, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Just back in the body. Get back in the body. Get the fuck back in the body. I mean, you're having a hard time. Be gentle, gentle.
Yeah, but it's just to know, like, you know, it is, and it, again, it's because what you're doing is you're feeling yourself in the place in the world. And then, you know, maybe it's looking around and seeing what's around you, you know, whether or not it's a sound or it's a funny looking plant, you know, or something like that, you know, that kind of brings you back into the world and then giving you a little bit of space to be able to say something to yourself, to be able to, you know, and it doesn't work all the time.
That's the other thing too.
But what it does do is when you practice it, at least this is what I'm starting to notice with my panic attacks, is that the more I practice it, the less panic attacks I have.
Yeah, totally. Because there's that anticipatory aspect to panic attacks, you know? Especially like having one recently.
The anticipatory ones are, that's actually a thing too.
That is the fucking worst, man. Because they'll last longer.
Yeah.
Because you're not in the full panic.
Yeah. And so you're looking, so that's kind of, I think that's similar to somatic OCD. I might be wrong about that, where you're starting to search for clues.
Yes, totally. And it was like, check in on my breathing. Do I feel like the walls are closing in? Like, can I get out of here quickly? Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a whole OCD thing.
Yeah. Yes. Just when I'm like, you don't have OCD. They keep pulling me back in. I mean, yeah. Everything is a practice.
It is. Yeah.
And I'm so glad that you're taking that ACT class, not only for you, but also for me, because I feel like I learn a lot. And I'm also like, maybe I should take this class.
Yeah, I mean, or you know, Johnny, who's the instructor in the class, Johnny Say, he has a bunch of videos on YouTube as well.
Oh, cool.
I would check that out, and I follow him on Instagram. I think our Comically Exposed account also follows him on Instagram. Yeah. So you can find him in multiple different ways. But so far, I'm really liking the class. The one thing that I can say, though, I think that in the future I might be looking for a group therapy. Because I think recommend. That I think I'm starting to notice, I'm like, oh, maybe this is a, you know, learning from you, but then also learning for myself, realizing, you know, it's good to be in practice.
Yeah.
You know,
and also to just not feel like a weirdo. You know what I mean? And for me, it's just like when I am talking to other people who have OCD or anxiety or whatever, I'm like, okay, cool.
Yeah. That we're not alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't have to like keep hiding this thing, you know? Yeah. Okay. We have been talking for almost an hour.
I know.
And it has been fantastic. But also, one of my valued activities is I'm going to go get food with a friend. From my aqua aerobics class.
Ooh.
Brag. I made a friend in aqua aerobics. So, yeah. So we're going to go get mozzarella sticks.
Oh, that's so, that's so cute. It's not a 90-year-old, right?
No, she's my age. She has blue hair. So I was like turquoise, like awesome blue hair. And so for a long time, I've been like kind of clocking her and being like, I want her to be my friend. I want her to be my friend. And I did it.
But, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
I'll meet her. But in any case, okay. I'm excited for us to start doing fun comedy stuff that just makes us fucking laugh. And I am, you know, grateful for this podcast and all of the work that you put into it and for you and your friendship.
No.
And high fives.
Yeah, high fives. Yeah, high we fives. Did it.
We did it. Meow, 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 meow. All right, cool. Well, thanks everybody for joining us. Have a really good time in your life doing things.
Everything.
And stuff. Yes. So,
bye everyone.
Bye-bye.
Welcome to the end of the show. This is Gabby Blackman.
And this is Heather Nye.
Thank you for listening to Comically Exposed. We are just a little show with two creators who edit and produce each episode. We appreciate all your support.
If you like what you heard, please follow us on Instagram at comicallyexp.podcast. That's comicallyexp.podcast.
Or subscribe to us on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. New episodes drop every other Wednesday.
Also, special thanks to Track Club and Goldenfinch for providing the music.
Thanks for listening. And hey, everybody, today is a great day to expose yourself. Okay, until next time, ta-da for ta-da.
Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.